Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. Echo membership will provide you with unlimited access to other educational material, as well as a huge number of other advantages. Please check this out at www.echo-ibd.eu.
Hello, I'm Matthew Waterman. I'm a gastroenterologist at the Rambam Healthcare Campus in Haifa, Israel. And I'm going to discuss with you today the topic of mild Crohn's disease, how to manage it and how to treat it. I have many financial disclosures and many interactions with many pharmaceutical companies, but as you will see, most of my talk will be of how not to prescribe medicine. So let's discuss this patient. She's a 24-year-old college student who has undergone a gastroscopy and an ileocolonoscopy for iron deficiency anemia. She had a hemoglobin level of 95 grams per liter. But when you question her, she reports having almost no abdominal symptoms, except for occasional mild diarrhea lasting no more than a day or two, and only rarely associated with very mild, non-debilitating abdominal pain. She has a paternal cousin with Crohn's disease, and when the ileocolonoscopy was done, there were some very small ulcerations along the large intestine, and a few ulcerations also in the terminal ileum, but these have been shallow, although they were numerous. Then, according to the echo guidelines, and after histology, a diagnosis of Crohn's disease was made, and an MR enterography was done, and there was a very limited, non-stricturing, non-penetrating segment of terminal ileum involvement with Crohn's disease. So in summary, almost an asymptomatic patient with no severe disease, very mild findings on endoscopy, and just anemia. Would you start immunosuppressing medications on this patient, or would you just prescribe oral or parenteral iron supplementation? So to think about these heavy issues, one has to discuss the goals of therapy with the patient. So what are the goals of therapy? We want to induce clinical remission. We want the patient to remain in remission throughout their lives. We want to enhance the quality of life. We want to avoid the long-term toxicity of medications. We would like to change disease natural history, although we do not know a lot about it. And we want to prevent long-term complications and perhaps cure, although we don't know anything about cure because we don't know the cause of the disease. So discussing this with the patient, she has a good quality of life. She has no symptoms. She has mild disease involvement. So what are we trying to aim here for? So what we are trying to aim is basically to change the natural history of Crohn's disease. We all know the diagram by Cohen and Ali from the IBD journal in 2002. They took a lot of patients, followed them up for 20 years, and found that some 50% would develop penetrating complications after 10 years from the diagnosis, and some additional, and some of them will also have stricturing disease behavior. So is this the patient? Is this our patient? Is she going to develop penetrating disease or stricturing disease, or is this not our patient? We also know that the cumulative risk of surgery in Crohn's disease is about 75% after 20 years from the diagnosis. So does this apply to our patient, or does it not apply to our patient? From the big data from the Ipsen cohort in Norwegian in the 1990s, we know that some 43% of Crohn's disease patients will have initially a big flare, and then their disease will wane and become much less aggressive along the time. Is this our patient, or is she going to develop recurrent flare-ups, recurrent or prolonged activity, or she's going to get worse a long time? We do not know that. We also have the notion that if we treat the flares of inflammation correctly, we will prevent stricture formation, we will prevent fistula formation, and then we'll prevent surgery. But what if she doesn't develop any stricturing complications in the future? What if she doesn't develop penetrating complications? We also know that medications in some cases are very effective in trying to reduce the risk for intestinal surgery, at least if we can achieve mucosal healing. But what is mucosal healing in this patient? If somebody has a few aftae along the long or the large intestine or the small intestine, does that mean that they are in high risk for disease progression? And we also need to bear in mind the risk for long-term risk of thiopurines, and also TNF-alpha blockers, and especially the combination of all of them for lymphoma, for cervical cancer, for non-melanoma skin cancer, and for infections. And the lifetime risk could be quite significant, especially at the older age population. So this patient now is 24 years old. What happens when she's becoming 40 or 60? Do we still prescribe those medications, and for what reason? So you see, there are more questions than answers in this case, and we need to balance the potential benefits and the potential risk, because I think it's probably quite intuitive that one size doesn't fit all. Now, the ECHO guidelines from 2016 are important because they provide us some clues to how to approach such patient. And I cite, it is important to remember that an appreciable proportion of patients with Crohn's disease have a mild pattern of disease. So a significant proportion, this could be our patient. So what do we do? What is mild Crohn's disease? How do I identify a patient who has mild Crohn's disease, especially for the future? So we have some clinical predictors at diagnosis, predictors of disease progression or debilitating disease. The most important one would be the French study that was published in Gastroenterology in 2006. They identify perianal disease, early age diagnosis, less than 40, smoking, and also recurrent need for corticosteroid therapy as predictors of debilitating disease. But what is the problem with our patient? If we take, let's instance, a cohort of 300 patients with Crohn's disease, and we see how many of our patients subscribe to these predictors of poor prognosis, we see that almost two-thirds of our patients will have such characteristics. And if they have such characteristics, that means that we will probably need to prescribe aggressive therapy for them. Is this true? What if we actually test it? So there was a study done by Cornenau, published in Gastroenterology in 2013, that took those patients and prescribed them a single course of corticosteroids to induce remission, and then randomized them to two arms. One would be ongoing thiopurine therapy, the other would be on-demand therapy. And what was quite remarkable, that even though those patients were at high risk for debilitating disease, some 60% of the patients remained in complete remission throughout the 3 years of follow-up, not even one flare-up. And the chances of getting surgery were, again, very, very low, even at those high-risk patients. There were no more than 15%. So that means that even those patients with higher characteristics, high markers of poor prognosis, they still, most of them will do quite well during at least a three-year follow-up. And there's also some studies in the pediatric population that show that sometimes, even if the child presents with a very severe presentation, very high CRP, very high inflammatory markers, not all of them will develop a future risk of surgery in a significant manner. There were also some biochemical and serological predictors of poor prognosis. One would be the antibacterial antibodies, anti-CB1, anti-OMC, ASCA, PIANCA. If you have many of those markers, especially in high titers, then your chances of of developing complications are high over a follow-up of 15 years. Of course, only a small fraction of our patients will have all four positive markers in their serum, but if you have none of them, then your prognosis would be great. We also know that the higher CRP at diagnosis, the higher chance of getting an ileal resection in the long term. But probably one of the best predictors of poor prognosis would be how the colon and small intestine appear on endoscopy. By a study by Mathieu Allais, published already 15 years ago, it was shown that if you have deep ulcers or extensive ulcerations and confluent ulcers, your chances of getting surgery are much higher as if you have shallow ulcers or just a small acne in your colon. This was not done for the terminal ileum, but I guess we could extrapolate for the terminal ileum as well. So deep colonic ulceration predicts penetrating disease behavior. And we also know from the famous study by Rutgers, that if you have extensive disease recurrence on endoscopy with a deep ulcers, confluent ulcers, or stricture, your chances of getting another surgery are very high. So there are endoscopic markers that predict poor prognosis. We have biochemical markers and serological markers that predict poor prognosis. But the clinical markers are associated with poor prognosis, but we see that even carriage of those markers doesn't really predict that you will have a bad disease outcome. What about genetic markers? These markers also have initially been associated with poor prognosis, but even if you carry, let's say, two alleles associated with a risk of NOD2, still your chances of getting poor prognosis are quite small. So the genetics are quite a failure in predicting poor outcomes in Crohn's disease. So while we do know to identify markers of poor prognosis, still we need to understand that their power is quite limited and decision-making is quite difficult. So back to our patient. Now, this is your patient. Would you treat her for induction of remission? So the Crohn's guidelines say that it is important to remember that one option for selected patients with mild disease would be to start no active treatment. Or if you do need to start with treatment because of symptoms, oral budesonide would be the preferred treatment. And it's not, you don't need to continue therapy after remission has been achieved. For colonic disease, you can prescribe sulfasalazine because it's more likely to induce remission than placebo only for colonic disease. But what about maintenance therapy? This is an even more difficult question. So the maintenance therapy is for life, right, if it works. But the risks, the long-term risks are significant. We showed already that there's an increased risk for malignancy and infection. And also the efficacy of maintenance of remission is quite dismal. I mean, not more than 40 or 30% will remain on long-term remission with any of our biological therapy. So there is a question of efficacy, and there is uncertainty whether this kind of maintenance therapy is safe on the long term. So the ECHO guidelines say that we need to take into account three main factors: the course of the disease, how severe it is, the extent of the disease, if somebody has a very extensive kind of bowel movement, and the presence of biological or endoscopic signs of severe inflammation. And then we need to take into account the potential for complication. And patients should be encouraged to participate in the decision-making process. There are all sorts of integrating models of predicting prognosis, especially those who have been achieved by machine learning, by Corey Siegel and others published, that we can actually try to identify the risk of a specific patient for progression, and then the risk for complications, and also therapy-associated complications, and to try to make decisions like that. We can put them all into our computer and get a score which either says that this is in favor of treatment or no. And in mild Crohn's disease patients, definitely the risk for early immunosuppressive medications is not comparable to the potential benefit, because the disease behavior is actually very mild and there's no risk for increased complications for the future. So what we have is actually inaccurate disease cause markers from population-based studies. We also have inaccurate treatment outcome biomarkers from population-based studies. We have diverse definitions for patient population, and we have no real ability to weigh the risk-benefit ratio. So how do we practice medicine like that? So the answer is really extensive monitoring. If you have a patient and you decide not to treat her, such patient as in this case, you still need to make sure that the patient continues to have a mild disease course in the future. You have to not just base your decisions on symptoms, but also on markers that correlate with mucosal damage. These markers could be fecal calprotectin, they could be CRP, they could be blood leukocytes, but they could not be symptoms, because symptoms aren't always associated with bad mucosal disease. And still, endoscopy probably best predicts the long-term disease behavior. So probably it would be prudent to repeat endoscopy in those patients, even if you don't treat them at all, to make sure that your strategy of observe and see is effective and that disease doesn't change its behavior over time. Thank you.